Blog Talk Radio.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Going Old School Show. Our podcast on blogtalkradio.com each and every Wednesday, and we are live on this Wednesday, October 5th of 2022. No Crow, but Johnny Sexton, yours truly, and Joe Ferrandon on the fort. Let's bring Joe in. Joe, how you doing?
Hey, doing good tonight. It's like looking forward to another nice hour and a half show. Should be fun. Should be good. Baseball players are here. It was weird seeing the basketball start Sunday, hockey. So it's that time of the year. All four sports are going to be rocking and rolling.
You got listen. I'm just a moment or two. We'll be joined as we are each and every Wednesday at this time by Howard Balzer, who's NFL Hall of Fame select and the covers the Cardinals and the NFL for PHNX.com. But we will be talking a little baseball later in the hour. Got to talk about Zekerly. Got his last broadcast on Nesson for the Red Sox today after 20 years. An emotional one at that. Thoughts on the upcoming MLB playoffs is the wild card play-in games. All four of them start this Friday. We'll give our opinions on that, maybe a little further on down the road. Did we just witness the greatest offensive season by Aaron Judge, who hit number 62 just yesterday? We can talk about that as we go along, too. So, yeah, we'll get all the NFL stuff, and we will debut our NFL top five rankings. So we got a lot upcoming for you on the show. Like we said, John Crow is vacationing with the family, which is what I think is most important in our lives, and hopefully each and every one of you guys are having fun with your family and well as we approach the Halloween season, Joseph.
Well, it's my favorite season time of the year, Halloween. It's all about scaring living crap out of people. Let me know, wait, Halloween season.
Yeah, well, I heard we can do that. But before we reach him, we talk about the other topic on the show. As you do each and every week, let's bring him in. He covers the NFL and the Arizona Cardinals for Phoenix.com, NFL Hall of Fame, and a lot of other things. And he joins us each and every week, and he does right now. Let's say hello to Howard Balzer. Howard, Joe, and John here, just two J's for you this week. How are you, sir? Thanks once again for your time.
Doing very well. And it's interesting that it's Joe and John because I had to pass along a quote from Cliff Kingsbury, who was asked about, you know, not having DeAndre Hopkins in, you know, for these first six games. Now, four of them, of course, are over, two more to go. And if it's impacted play calling and things like that. And Kingsbury's quote was a pretty interesting one, where he said, my very first college coach, his saying was, it's not about the X's and the O's, it's about the Jimmies and the Joes. So I know you're not Jimmy and Joe, but it's pretty close. So
pretty
I thought that was pretty good. And it reminded me of, and I know we've talked about Dick Vermeil and the Hall of Fame and all those things. It always reminded me when, of course, he took over the Rams in 1997 and proceeded where the Rams had won seven games their first year in St. Louis, six their second, and then the first 2 years under Vermeil, it went down to 5-4. And right, there was talk about a coaching change and this and that. Well, he made some changes, brought in Mike Martz as offensive coordinator, brought in Trent Green as the quarterback. They traded for Marshall Faulk. And they sign Adam Timmerman, an excellent offensive lineman. Of course, they had lightning in the bottle with Kurt Warner. But whenever Dick Vermeil would be asked about that year, it's amazing how I became such a better coach when I had better players.
Yeah, kind of comes into territory, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does. And as I drive around, I'm sure you guys deal with it too. As I drive around and listen to talk shows and listen to guys pontificate and how you got to do this with your offense and why is the offense so bad and fans are saying fire the coach and all these things and the play calling isn't very good. And I always point – sometimes, guys, I think maybe I was a coach in a previous life, because I always talk about that, and people don't look at this, is that when coaches, especially on the offense, well, on both sides certainly, but offense mm-hmm. gets so much of the focus, when they devise the game plan, they're devising it with the players they have and coming up with what they feel is the best, gives them the best chance to win that week against whoever's on the other team. But if you don't have the personnel, you can only do so much with your play calling. Mm-hmm. And I thought this after the Monday night game with the 49ers, sorry for me just rambling here, but I thought of this after, you know, when everyone was raving about Cooper Kupp, oh, and the career high and 14 catches and this and that, what a great game for Cooper Kupp. And I'm not, I mean, the guy's a great, he's a hell of a player, but no one pointed out that his 14 catches averaged 9.7 yards per completion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why is that? Well, because the great genius, Sean McVay, the anointed play caller in the NFL, had a game plan that they knew they don't have anybody to go. Everyone says, go deep, go deep. Well, you know, if you don't have guys who can go deep, then you can't do that. And Cooper Kupp averaged over 13 yards per reception last season. And why is it so much different? Well, A, you know, last year at the end of the year, they had Odell Beckham Jr., but maybe one of the most underrated players on the Rams was Van Jefferson,
mm-hmm.
a fast receiver who made plays down the field. He only had 50 catches last year, but he averaged 16 yards per catch. And they haven't had him this year. He's had a knee injury, missed the first three games and went on missed the first two games, then went on injury reserve the day before they played the Cardinals. And so they're not the same offense right now, plus their offensive line. And if you're a head coach, you're not going to be taking shots down the field or trying to open things up in the offense when you know your line can't protect the quarterback. And so
mm-hmm.
this is all football 101, but most people don't look at it that way because everyone just loves to hang the quarterback or hang the play caller when an offense doesn't do well. But there's always reasons for that to happen, and most of the time it's because of personnel.
Right. Coaches, and players play. And we're here with Howard Balzer. And, Howard, you can ramble on any time. I love listening to you, and I think you know that's true. But let's talk about the Cardinals. And I got to start with J.J. Watt and the emotion. I mean, it was an emotional week with
yeah.
him, with the players. And how did you see it from your angle, and what did that do to that team emotionally again on Sunday when they played a pretty darn good game, and the effect and what it meant? Because, man, that post-game press conference by J.J. Watt was some emotional one, Howard.
Yeah, it really was. And I was in a debate with my wife, and I said he was on the verge of tears. And he said, no, he was crying. I said, well, I didn't see tears rolling down his face, but he was awful close to crying, as you note. And there was one answer where I didn't see it originally when I saw it, but then one of the TV stations had a close-up as he was talking. You could see his lips quivering as he
mm-hmm.
was talking. That's how emotional he was. And what a lot of people don't realize is, obviously, we know what he went through last week, but he also went through that amid knowing that he and his wife are scheduled to have their first child in a couple weeks. And so I thought one of the most riveting comments he made in his post-game press conference is when he said, over the last few months, we've had a whole bunch of ultrasounds looking at our baby boy. Well, here I am last week getting an ultrasound of my heart. And
right.
that was a bit scary. And he talked about how I've never been scared of a surgery. I've never been scared of pain. You know, I've never worried about those things. But this was a whole lot different. But, you know, no one, at least on the outside, no one knew what was going on when they had illness listed, you know, added to his injury report last week on Thursday, because he didn't practice on Wednesday because of a calf injury. He's been dealing with that since the beginning of the season. And so all of a sudden that his tweet comes out Sunday morning and you're going, oh my goodness, you know, this is crazy. And then he goes out there, not only plays, but played like 62% of the snaps and had two passes, you know, pass deflections, and just played, you know, an excellent game. And, you know, Cliff Kingsbury talked about how inspiring it was to his teammates. And I think, too, I was asked this on another interview, is that, you know, amidst everything that was going on with Tua Tagovailoa and all those things with concussions, you know, how could he be allowed, how could J.J. Watt be allowed to play? And so I said, well, A, it's a different situation, number one. Number two, the doctors cleared him, and not only one doctor, but he called several specialists just to get their opinion, and they all said that, hey, this is not, it's nothing to fool around with when your heart is out of rhythm, but they shocked it back into rhythm. And once that's done, they said that, hey, as long as you feel comfortable, there's no reason why you shouldn't play. And one of his comments was, well, you know, I'm going back and forth and I'm wondering, what should I do? And then I said, I feel more uncomfortable sitting on my couch watching this game when the doctors have said it's okay for me to play. And so he did, went out, had a great game. Cardinals played excellent defense. I do temper it because they were playing Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a very good offense. But they did an excellent job shutting down Christian McCaffrey, who did, you know, missed a couple practices during the week with a thigh injury, quad. So we don't know how much that maybe affected him. But he was out there, and when he was running and he had the ball, he didn't seem to be labored or anything like that. But they held him to 8 to 27 yards rushing on 8 carries and took them totally out of their running game. And then when the Cardinals got a lead, then the Panthers passed the ball to end the game, by the way, guys, 19 times in a row. Well, they didn't pass it 19 times. There were a couple sacks in there, or I think it might have been one sack. There were 19 called pass plays to finish the game for them. So, yeah, the defense played a very good game. They kept the Cardinals in it when they had another rough start offensively, even though they did fall behind 7-0 and 10-3, but they were never down by 2 scores. And then the offense came alive in the second half, and they had a nice game. So they've got a great challenge this week against the Eagles, who right now you could argue is playing the best football in the NFL. And the Cardinals still get off to tough starts, and they've lost 7 consecutive games at home dating back to last season. So we'll see if they can put on a much better show for the home fans on Sunday afternoon.
Howard, speaking of great challenges, another Wednesday, another long list of players who did not practice. 10 this week, including Marquise Brown and Zach Ertz. 5 limited. So any word on the only guy it seems that you have marked out was Matt Prater.
He was declared out. So they and it was a pretty wild thing on Sunday when he had kicked and then kicked some field goals. And then when they got a lead, they had a running back, Eno Benjamin, kick off and then tried for a 2-point conversion late because they didn't want to push Prater. Well, turns out that obviously they've already decided that he won't kick this week. And a guy named Matt Amendola, who kicked a couple of games for the Chiefs in week 2 and week 3 and missed a 34-yard field goal, by the way, in their 3-point loss to the Colts. So it'll be interesting to see how he does. But, yeah, you're right. It's a long injury report. Ertz missed practice because of rest. So that's not really a concern. But their offensive line right now is, you know, they have, you know, Max Garcia, who came in to replace Justin Pugh, who left last week's game. He had an elbow injury coming in. And then Cliff Kingsbury said on Monday when he was asked, was this an aggravation of the old injury or something new? And Kingsbury said a little of both. And so then we started wondering, oh, was there some new injury? Well, he was only listed with an elbow today, and he did not practice. Max Garcia, who replaced him when he went out on Sunday, he did not practice because of a toe injury. Rodney Hudson, their center, has been dealing with a knee injury since training camp, has been playing each of the first 4 weeks, but hasn't totally been himself. And then even DJ Humphreys, their starting left tackle, was limited today with a hamstring injury. And Kingsbury admitted, he said, we're not going to know until game time or game day or the weekend and if how many of these offensive linemen are going to be able to play. And so that's not good, you know, going against that Eagles defense. And they did sign Billy Price, a center guard, off the Raiders practice squad yesterday. And so we'll see what that line looks like, but they've, like you said, they've got a bunch of injuries. You know, Marquise Brown, he was added to the injury report on Friday with the foot injury, and that's what he was listed as today, is not practicing. He played a lot of snaps on Sunday because of that, with whatever the foot injury is, and he had a pretty good game. So I don't know if that's too much of a concern. They're hoping to get A.J. Green back, Antoine Wesley, who's been on injured reserve, returned to practice today, designated to return. So they're getting some depth back at some spots, but still dealing with some things there, obviously, on the offensive line.
He covers the Cardinals for PHNX.com. Howard Balzer joined us here on the Going Old School Show. You just mentioned Christian McCaffrey and how the Cardinals defense neutralized him, but seems to be a little thing growing there, because a couple of weeks before that, it was Devontae Adams and Cooper Kupp. What is this team doing defensively, schematically, that you see to neutralize some of these big players?
It's a great question. And I think, the one thing Vance Joseph does very well as a coordinator, he has a lot of different packages and uses, different combinations on the field. I mean, there's been times he only has two defensive linemen on the field. He hasn't done that much this year, but he does a lot of different things. And so they just feel that, hey, if we can stop their best players, then we're going to have a chance to win. And they've done a nice job of that. When they've been good, though, it was funny. A couple weeks ago, I said, after the Raiders game, I said, what was the big turnaround? Because they couldn't stop the Raiders in the first half, even without Devontae Adams having a lot of catches. But they shut down that defense in the second half. And I said, what was the difference? And he just said, simply, third down. And they've done a nice job on third down. And against the Panthers, Carolina only converted 2 of 10 third down plays. So they've got guys. It sounds simplified, guys, but when you talk to players, they always give the same answer, right? Well, we just have to be more focused. We have to be more detailed, and they always channel Bill Belichick. Every player has to do their job. And that's really what it comes down, though, to. It sounds simplistic. It sounds cliched, but it is true. Because I think, as we all know, there's that perception when a team doesn't play well, or a defense, offense, whatever it is, well, the whole defense sucks, right? Or the whole offense sucks. But a lot of times, it might be just one player on a certain play either not doing his job and a mental mistake, or he just gets beat by somebody better on a certain play. And that can blow up a play. And you never know which plays are going to be the ones that end up being crucial ones in a game. But that's most of the time what it comes down to, is as many guys as possible just going out there, staying, Zach Allen, their defensive end, who had a tremendous game on Sunday with a sack and three pass deflections. And so he was asked about it Monday when he talked to the media, and he said, we just played a sound game. Guys were flying to the ball. Everybody had good gap, gap control. And that's the key thing. And it sounds boring when you say all that stuff, but that's what football comes down to most of the time. Leave your gap because you want to make a play, and then all of a sudden the running back cuts back in your gap and goes for 20 yards. That's the surest way to end up losing. And so that's, it sounds simplistic, but that is really, the scheme is important, yes, but it still comes down to the players executing that scheme and doing what they're supposed to most of the time.
Well, Howard, I said he had a lot of injuries, but like you had said, Antoine Wesley, and you've got Antonio Hamilton back. At least Hamilton was your starting cornerback until that freak accident in the preseason. How much will he help the defense out, him being healthy and giving another cornerback possibly go nickel dime packages where he really couldn't go before?
No, you're exactly right. That's a big plus for them. Getting Hamilton back. He was on the practice field today, and Cliff Kingsbury said you could not only see him, you could hear him. He was very energized, excited to be back, and that there's no question that gives them depth that they didn't have. And so, and last week, by the way, they finally got Trayvon Mullen Jr. out there, only 18 snaps on defense, but it was his first defensive snaps of the season after they acquired him from the Raiders in the week of the cut to 53, and he came in with some of the residual effects of the toe injury and having to learn the defense. And so they didn't want to put too much on him to put him out there too soon until he really knew what he was doing. So he got 18 snaps last week. Now you have Hamilton coming back, like you said, Mullen getting, you know, more comfortable. And so all of a sudden, a very thin cornerback group has, you know, four pretty good guys back there right now. And they'll need it, obviously, against the Eagles. I mean, you know, here's another example of personnel and what teams do around the quarterback. And obviously, Jalen Hurts deserves a lot of credit for what the Eagles have done this season so far in four games. But look what they did with the acquisition of A.J. Brown to go with Devontae Smith, who in his second year is really making a big jump. And I'm sure, you know, a certain amount of that big jump is because you have A.J. Brown on the other side. And now all of a sudden, you know, they're making plays and making big plays. And Hurts is, you know, is making them a good tight end. You know, it's interesting, Zach Ertz is going to be playing against his former team, who, of course, the Eagles traded during last season to the Cardinals. And, you know, but, you know, the Eagles had the guy that was going to be playing a lot more than him in Dallas Goedert. So, you know, that's a talented offense with the guys they have, and they're running the ball well. And so, but back to my original point, they're going to need that depth in that secondary to try to slow down that Eagles offense on Sunday.
He's on Twitter at HBalzer721, and he joined us here on our Going Old School show, Howard Balzer. Howard, a guy I'm really taking affinity to is linebacker Dennis Garlic, who's played a lot of special teams in his 5 years, but he seems to be fitting really well into this defense now. Tell me what he brings to that unit.
Yeah, he brings a lot of energy, you know, a lot of that passion for the game. And, you know, they're still looking for, you know, a little bit better pass rush from the outside linebackers. You know, they drafted some guys who, you know, haven't really made, you know, an impact yet, do that from time to time. And, you know, he had a big interception last week on a tip ball. And so, but the guy's one of those guys that he's just an infectious player, if you know what I mean, in terms of, mm-hmm. you know, getting guys going. And he's just really rounding into the form that he had 2 seasons ago when he had – no one knew about him. And that was probably a little bit of why – of how he was able to have 7 sacks and only 93 snaps. But then he tore his ACL late in the season, oddly enough, against the Eagles in a late-season game, and is just now really feeling – you know, he's feeling himself – after that injury. So they like him a lot. I don't know that he's ever really going to be that, quote, every down edge rusher, but when he's out there, he's someone that the offense has to pay attention to.
Howard, I got a two-part question, one on offense, one on defense. Zaven Collins, how much has he improved over the first 4 weeks? And Trey McBride, how much more is he going to be involved in the offense as a tight end with Ertz?
Zaven Collins has made an incredible leap from last year. He's basically the only game he hasn't played virtually all the snaps was a game he left because of a shoulder injury. But he's not only playing all the snaps, he's making plays in the run game. He led the team in tackles last week with 8. He had a huge, it wasn't all him, but he made the initial stop, and Marcus Golden came in to clean it up on an early 3rd-and-1 in the game on Christian McCaffrey, who, of course, we were talking about earlier before. So he's just playing very solid football right now. He's not necessarily, quote, a big guy, a big play guy who's going to get interceptions or sacks or those things, but just plays very well in the run game and has really come on in his second year. Trey McBride went from being inactive in week 1 to 1 snap in week 2, 5 snaps in week 3. And then last week in this game against the Panthers, he played 32 snaps or maybe it was 24, 32%. I forget the exact number, but he played a whole bunch of snaps, had 3 catches for 24 yards, not huge numbers, but, you know, had some important catches during the game. And they're really high on him. They just think that each game, as he gets more comfortable, that he is going to add some things to this offense. And so even though these next few weeks are going to be telltale signs, you know, they're getting Antoine Wesley back this week, as we referenced. DeAndre Hopkins now only has to miss 2 more games, and then he's back. And then you have him there with Marquise Brown, obviously. And if McBride continues what he's doing, along with Zach Ertz at tight end, all of a sudden you've got the team that they expected to be when the season, you know, the season began. But it happens with rookies a lot of times. It takes them a certain amount of adjustment to play at a high level, especially a tight end and especially in this particular offense. But I think, you know, they would never say it out loud, guys, but I think deep down, especially with the way the season began, with the three games against the Chiefs, the Raiders, and the Rams, and then, of course, this week with the Eagles, they knew they were Eagles were a good team. They probably didn't expect them to be undefeated. But I think in their mind they were feeling, if we can just be 500 when DeAndre Hopkins comes back, they like that position that they would be in going down those final 11 games. And, you know, that's certainly, you know, like I said, you never say that out loud. We just want to be 500 after 6 weeks. But considering all the things that have happened to them and the players they've lost and, you know, the depth issues at certain positions, that they're sitting 2-2 now is, you know, is a plus, even though they haven't played their best football or what they believe will be their best football.
Hall of Fame Selection Committee member Howard Ball is joining the Going Old School. Howard, I want to kind of move on a little bit. And, you know, in society, we as humans, we're reacting. We react to things, and hindsight is the only pure science we know, because in hindsight, everything is clear. I want to get your thoughts on Tua situation and the reaction by the NFL, the reaction by the fans, and the outcry. Just give me your thoughts on the situation, where we stand now, what you think may be done with the NFL, if anything at all, sir.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be things done, and you're right about hindsight, and that, you know, of course, I always love everybody who says that they're a doctor, and so that they knew, because he stumbled, that they knew that that had to be a head injury, and they never should have characterized it as a back injury. And so I certainly you hope that players will be accountable at some point, but I'm sure that if Tua's head was like beating in his head and he had a headache or he was feeling dizzy or things like that, he wouldn't have put himself out there. I mean, yes, you do have to protect players from themselves, but when you come off something, and a lot of times concussions don't show themselves until later. I mean, it happened with Cameron Brate in the Tampa Bay game on Sunday against, you know, Kansas City, where the spotter thought that he collided his shoulder with Chris Godwin's helmet, not his helmet. And then he actually came back on the field for a few plays and then went into concussion protocol at halftime. So some of these things can be tricky. It's not perfect. Everyone thinks and should be perfect, and everyone is a doctor when they watch something on TV. But obviously, when they opted to, fire the independent consultant that was there at that game, it shows that they didn't think he handled it correctly. You know, did he or did he not? I mean, that was their opinion. And obviously, it just made it all the worse when, you know, if he had gotten through that game Thursday without hitting his head on the ground again, then maybe none of this happens in terms of, you know, and I know there was a certain amount of outcry after the first one, but obviously it was made worse when that happened only 4 days later. And now he's already been declared out of this week's game. But to answer your basic question, there will be changes, you know, one that everyone expects. And I think this can be a little, you know, it can lead to unfortunate, you know, unintended consequences when you make the decision that gross motor instability, where it gave those people examining the guy, if they believe that gross motor instability wasn't a concussion and happened with something for some other reason, then you can let the guy go back in and play. So I'm absolutely certain, guys, because nothing, like I said, nothing is perfect, that there will be a player removed from a game because of this gross motor instability. And they'll find out later that he didn't even have a concussion. And will that affect the team? Will that affect the game? Will that affect somebody's playoff spot? I predict that will probably happen. But I guess in the long run, it's best to err on the side of caution when those things happen. And so that'll be one change that will be likely made. I think that the NFL has done a lot of good things over the years with the protocols. Maybe they have to do a better job with the spotters. But, of course, that spotter is sitting up in the booth and he's looking at a TV and looking at an angle, and we see it all the time. How many times do we see plays when a player hits another guy and it said, oh, that looked like helmet to helmet, and then when they slow it down on replay and they see it and they say, oh, no, he only hit his shoulder. I mean, angles and all those different things can show different things at different times. And so those spotters, I would presume they would have the ability to watch it and watch a replay, but, you know, sometimes they're not going to be able to see it quickly enough. So, you know, those are the issues with this, where it's never going to be perfect. You can only try to do it, put the protocols in for as good as you think they are, but then it's up to them to be followed, and that you hope that they're followed correctly, but that they're also correct. And so, you know, that's the tough part with all of this. Like I said, I don't want to repeat myself, but there's no perfect solution, even though it seems that there are those who think that could be possible.
Well, there is no perfect solution, but, I mean, granted that the Patriots are bad this year, but the overreaction seems to be of if a quarterback is even questionable, hits his head, they're going to take him out on the side of caution. It seems like going forward, the NFL, like as you said, the spotters will err on the side of caution, because it seemed like Brian Hoyer barely hit his head, but they were like, he was quick to go into the blue tent, and he was quick to be diagnosed as out. So do you feel going forward that they're just going to err completely on the side of caution? And, you know, granted, it, like you said, it could be a team that, hey, you get a playoff game later on, week 16, week 17, guy gets barely hit, but if a spotter deems he needs to go into the blue tent, this could have ramifications all year long.
No, absolutely. It could have ramifications. You mentioned week 16, 17, 18 in the playoffs. And if you're going to do it that way, you've got to be consistent. And so, I mean, the reality is that every time a guy, you know, gets hit in the helmet, whether it's on the ground or by another player, it doesn't mean that they suffered a concussion. And so, but I think obviously what they're looking for is to see, well, how does the player deal with it after that happens? And if they show that they're unsteady or that something like that is readily apparent, but a lot of times it's not. A lot of times it's not. And so, I've heard of instances, I know there are instances where you can get hit, you know, hit in the head or whatever it is, and all of a sudden you don't start getting symptoms until the next day. And so you could be continuing to play with a head injury. And so that, like I said, that's the tough part of all this. But like I said, it's going to have an impact. And I think there'll be fans and there'll be people be really bitter and upset by that if their team loses a game because a guy was taken out when perhaps he didn't have to be. But I think they will. You know, and I referenced the personal fouls and all those things. It was a few years ago when the penalties started being ramped up for that, and the officials were given the guidance to err on the side of caution there. If it looks like helmet to helmet or on a defenseless player, throw the flag. And then you watch the replay and you say, well, it wasn't. And all of a sudden, can't do anything about the penalty. We see it in college a lot of times, too, with the whole targeting thing. And so, and I know that's one of the reasons Bill Belichick has always pushed to have everything reviewable. And I've always thought that those type of plays that we just talked about should be reviewable and maybe even automatically reviewable, because those are game-changing plays when you're talking about 15-yard penalties. And so I don't know that that will ever happen. But I think that, you know, that erring on the side of caution makes sense for health reasons a lot of times, but competitively it can be a negative. And I'll say this too, and I think it always needs to be repeated. You know, the NFL, I've said they've done a good job with the concussion protocol and all that, but how much do they really care about safety when they keep pushing for more games?
Right.
They're at 17 now. Everyone believes in the next however many years is going to be 18. You know, every team's playing on Thursday night at some point, and that is brutal on players when you play a game on Sunday and then have to play a game on Thursday, especially for the team that has to travel. Most players, you ask them, they say they don't even start feeling human from the game on Sunday until Wednesday. and now Wednesday's a travel day for some teams. And teams don't even practice in those weeks, basically. They just have walkthroughs. So is that really good for the health and safety of players? You can argue it's not, but they keep pushing for more and pushing for more.
Well, Howard, that would be the first thing, in my opinion, Thursday night football. A lot of times it's not a good product because of what you just said. And if you really care about player safety, NFL, just start with that. And at least there you're starting to move that process in a positive light with the players. Because, you know, you say what you want, and we talked about, you know, that's, without the players, there's no NFL, and we got to really take care of them. And I hope the NFL does that, sir.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But, of course, the other thing at play, too, is that, you know, you're looking at the future of the league in terms of, and I know it was more of a discussion maybe 5-10 years ago, you know, how many parents are going to say, and I saw a column the other day, and I thought it was a pretty eye-opening column. It was written by Nancy Armour in USA Today, and she wrote, every time that a guy is put back in a game, or every time a coach don't make a decision on concussions, or a doctor, whoever makes that decision, she just said one question should be asked. Would you put your son back in the game? And all of a sudden, that takes on a whole different way of thinking. That's one thing the league is thinking about is, you know, there's been fewer kids playing football. I doubt that it'll ever be enough to keep the talent pool down, but you never know. You never know what the future holds. And so you do want there to be, you know, as much safety aspects when the game is being played as possible.
Cardinals for the NFL for PHNX.com. He's a Hall of Fame selector, and he hosts a week Hall of Fame radio show on Sirius and NFL Radio at Twitter at HBalzer721. And he's our weekly guest here on the Going Old School show. Howard, great stuff once again. Appreciate your time. Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend. We'll look forward to speaking with you the next week at this time.
Look forward to it, guys. Thanks a lot. Always enjoy coming on with you. Take care.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Howard.
That's Howard Balzer, and it's always good stuff for Howard Balzer. And again, if you get a chance, guys, and I subscribe to it, give it a shot. Give it a month. That if you like football in general, and we follow the Cardinals here, and he does a lot of Cardinals work, but he's a Hall of Fame guy, and he's just go on his Twitter and just for 1 month. Log on to gophnx.com and subscribe. Trust me, it's well worth the month. And if it's, I think it's $4.90, maybe $9, and just give it a shot and see what you like. And if you don't like it, then you just, a month's time, you can kind of move on, if you will. But he joins us each and every week here on the Old School Show, Chips and Joe here for you. No, JC is vacationing, but he's in here with spirit. Good, Joe.
We're going to be a long-time listener and faithful caller to the show on. Lou, welcome aboard, buddy.
Thanks for holding through there, Lou. Appreciate your time. What's on your mind, bro?
Sure. Well, now we're into the, you know, the one-quarter mark of the season, and I think there's been a few surprises. I mean, I don't know about you, but I think Jacksonville has been kind of like the surprise this season. I mean, I wasn't expecting them to be 2-2 right now. I expected them to still be like 0-4 in the toilet. But for some reason, they seem to be holding their own this year.
They have a coach there that is legitimate. They needed to get Urban Meyer out. I like Trevor Lawrence coming out of the draft, and I think you're going to see a better player with him. But they've got credibility now. Their coach has won a Super Bowl, so I agree with you. Jacksonville's a team on the come, my friend.
They've got some talent on that team, Lou. It's not like it's a bunch of has-beens and nobody's. They've actually got some good talent on the team, good wide receivers, a good young defense that, you know, Trevor Lawrence can be a very, very good quarterback. Yet to be known if he'd be a great, but if the kid has talent, he showed it in college, and with the right coaching and getting Meyer out of there was the best thing for that kid because let him be coached by real coaches and guys, and I think he will blossom into a very, very good quarterback.
Yeah, well, of course, Trevor Lawrence, I mean, I don't think he can do anything worse than last season because that was bad enough.
Yeah, I mean, he had to get – you couldn't see that kid's growth because, man, you couldn't go in because it's all about you protect him. And he got a lot, but he needed a change of – he definitely needed a change of culture, and he got it. And you got a coach in Aaron Peterson who's worked with quarterbacks before in Kansas City and Philadelphia. Heck, he won a Super Bowl against the Patriots with a backup guy. So that's the type of guy to be in there. And that's one of the teams that are to watch coming into the season, Lou. One of the teams I'm looking forward to watching as the season progresses.
And, you cannot Cooper Rush. I mean, he's doing for what Prescott couldn't do. So I think right now we're going to say Dak who?
Yeah. You know what? I think he's okay. He's played pretty well last week. I like that.
And just so you know, come on, you can pound your chest and beat your chest because, oh, wait, the New England Patriots are holding steady and holding down the basement in the AFC East. When's the last time you could
– Yeah.
And the Giants are in first place.
Yeah. Well, we got the Eagles in first place now, too, so.
Yeah. The second
That's
place,
right.
But still, they're 3-1.
Yeah.
They've done what people expected.
What's on your show this week, Lou?
Yeah. Well, we're going to be discussing, of course, the MLB playoffs, the wild card, and see who's going to face our Yankees. Do the Dodgers have enough to go all the way, even though they've had the best regular season record in the dog's age? We'll, of course, take our college and pro football picks. And I also want people's thoughts on the first half of the season. Like, you know, how would you grade your team? Like, say if you're a Raiders fan, how would you grade the Raiders? Or if you're a Rams, how would you that, et cetera, et cetera. So if you do call in this weekend, you know, I want to get your thoughts on that, of course. So if you got time on Saturday between 5 and 7 p.m. Eastern time, call the Enhanced Sports Show, 512-543-4662. Once again, 512-543-4662.
Lou, always, and thanks. I always appreciate your time. You're welcome. You know that.
Thanks.
Lou, right, appreciate buddy. Your time. Please.
That's Sweet Lou. We're going to call him Sweet Lou from the Jersey, the New York tri-state area, talking about today. A lot of good things over there. Like you said, Joe, Jets are 2-2. The Giants are 3-1 in that NFC East division, which is looking pretty rugged at the moment with the Cowboys and the Giants and, of course, the Eagles. We'll see what shakes down about big games this week. But you also got two new teams in the Major League Baseball playoffs, and which we will talk about in a little bit. But, Joe, what do you think? You debut our NFL tie power time on the old school show?
Yeah, it sounds good to me. We'll go with the top five. We can lead off with that. That's fine because I've got my top five now. It's like, you know, I think it's relatively early, but still, you know, you got to start with the top five. And it's almost a quarter of the season gone.
Yep.
So we can go with our top five, and I'll start this one off. And,
go ahead.
You know, team that I don't really like, but it doesn't matter if I like him or not, is the Dallas Cowboys are going to start off as my number five in the power rankings because, wait, quarterback controversy. Can we say Drew Bledsoe 2.0? Because that could be coming pretty soon because Cooper Rush, Reno, darn quarterback. He's getting the job done. He's not perfect. He's not great at it, but he's getting the job done, and they're winning with him. So at one point, do you stick with him and stay with him? Because right now he's at 60.8% completion percentage. Zeke has got 227 yards rushing. CeeDee Lamb has got 288 yards receiving. I mean, you know, Noah Brown is slowly but surely becoming a serviceable wide receiver, better than serviceable. I think he's being excellent. Cooper Rush has zero interceptions, only four TDs. But, like I said, he's getting the job done. The defense is getting the job done. They're my number five team right now.
My number five team coming in is inaugural top five power rankings on the Going Old School show. The Minnesota Vikings, wide receiver Justin Jefferson finally unleashed last week in London. Hey, what this team didn't do last year is win a lot of close games. The past two games, they've won by 4 points and 3 points respectively. That's the coaching change. That's we're learning how to win. They were really close with a really good team last year. And like I said, the injury would have found a way to lose last year. They're winning thus far. It's only two games in. But right now, Minnesota Vikings, my number five team in our NFL power rankings versus Chicago on Sunday.
Well, my number four team, who was my number one team, would have been a couple of weeks ago, but it's the Buffalo Bills at 3-1. They're looking not as mighty as they could have been, but still 3-1. Josh Allen, 67% completion percentage, 1,200-plus pass yards, 10 TDs passing, 3 TDs rushing. Unfortunately, he's the leading rusher on the team. It's like that's the dumb knock is, you know, they need to get more than him. Stephon Diggs, his usual self, 31 receptions, 406 yards, 4 TDs. Devon Singletary, even though he's not rushing the ball, he's still second in receiving with 17 receptions. Isaiah McKenzie, 15 receptions. It seems like they've got a bunch of guys behind Stephon Diggs, so there's no really justified number two, just a bunch of number threes and fours, but there's enough of them that Josh Allen has enough weapons around him. It's the defense is questionable this year. They've got some injuries going on. Can they hold it, and can they withstand the charge of the Miami Dolphins and the rest of the AFC and get to the championship? But right now, they're my number four team.
My number four team this week, Dallas. And you talk about, you know, CeeDee Lamb. Is he a number one receiver? Who knows? This and that. Stepping up, and can he do it? Well, Michael Gallup and his presence last week was felt big time in that offense, which is just doing enough to keep Cooper Rush manufacturing, spreading the ball out, and all that's done is have him win three straight games, which has been a long time since a Cowboy quarterback, Chris Young, has done that. So Michael Gallup is back for defense, taking a lot of pressure off Cooper by giving up a single touchdown in each of the last four games. Ladies and gentlemen, that Dallas defense is legit. I love Dan Quinn as a coordinator. He's a head coach in waiting if something stumbles to McCarthy. They're 3-1 right now, and they on the Rams this week. They're at LA, and I think they can beat this Rams team. They're going to LA, Rams, the defense champion, 4-1. Well, Jerry Jones is going to have himself have a little part. Right now, the Cowboys looking really good on offense and defense. Never mind, number four team this week.
No, you're going to be shocked at my number three team because, remember, this is up to only four games. This isn't the next four games. This is just these four. It's Miami Dolphins 3-1 because, yes, two is out. But when you have receivers named Waddle and Tyreek Hill, you're always a threat to go deep no matter who the quarterback is. Until they prove they can't win on the road consistently, I've got my number three team. Like I said, Tyreek Hill, 31 receptions. Waddle, 21 receptions. I mean, he's got a two TDs, three for Waddle. Rasheem Mostert only has 147 yards rushing. The defense is keeping him in. They've got a good young stable of cornerbacks and backside that they can stay in games. I think they can play with teams, but until they prove me differently, I've got him as my number three team.
My number three team this week are the Kansas City Chiefs. After a mistake-filled loss to the Colts by dominating a top-tier defense in the Buccaneers. And what they did, that game was not as close as the score indicated. All five KC TDs were scored by offensive balance, but only four takeaways by the defense. I'm a little worried about that. All they have this year have resulted in touchdowns. Pretty balanced Kansas City Chiefs team, if I say. They host the Las Vegas Raiders on Monday night. They're looking like the at AFC West. The Kansas City Chiefs are my number three team in our power rankings this week on the old school show.
They're your team, but right now I've got the Kansas City Chiefs as number two team in my power rankings, 3-1. Patrick Mahomes is just a magician. That touchdown he threw from the 2-yard line, it was basically on the line, and he just threw it. It was a magical move, and it's like, look, Clyde Edwards-Helaire seems like he's kind of rejuvenated himself. Looks like he could be what they envisioned him to be. That kid Pacheco is like good, small back, but he's strong as an ox, and he's like, he's getting him some yards. I mean, Juju has only got 19 receptions, but he's like, he's still finding his way. He's got some height. Travis Kelce leading the way. You know, you think he's on his downside, but the man has 26 receptions this year. 322 yards. So, I mean, they're there and getting there. I still think they're the team to beat, be them and Buffalo in the AFC. It's just that they can be beaten, but they're still my number two team until somebody knocks them off.
Yep. My number two team are the Buffalo Bills. Okay, game last week for the Ravens, which quickly became a statement one for the Bills. I've never seen a team that hasn't won as big a target on their back as the Buffalo Bills, at least in the AFC. They're anointed as the team to beat in the AFC, although Kansas City like may argue that point. But Buffalo has shown its resiliency in a year with their target on their back. They're, you know, injuries to the secondary were a concern, but don't tell that to safety Jordan Poyer, because last week his two interceptions, one to keep the score, came up huge, and that Buffalo Bill team came back 17 points down in that game. That's a resilient Buffalo team sleeping on it. People are like, well, they were close games winning. If style points, Joe, you don't need. It's just a matter of winning, because a week after they don't care. It's a win or it's a loss. That matters. And right now, the Bills are winning, and they're playing really well, and they are my number two team this week. And they are home versus the Steelers this week.
And for the fools out there who kept on saying that Carson Wentz was a much better quarterback than Jalen Hurts, well, no. The Eagles are my number one team this week, and Jalen Hurts only has 1,120 yards passing, 66.7% completion percentage. Only four TDs, two interceptions, but, you know, he's throwing the ball around. He's got Devonta Smith with only 15 receptions. He's got A.J. Brown, with 25 receptions. Nate Sanders is leading the way offensively with 4.9-yard average rushing, 356 yards total. But, I mean, the guy, he's got a lot of weapons. He's doing his thing, doing what he needs, and the defense is playing excellent right now. The defense is holding teams down and not giving up a bunch of big plays. And right now, let's see if they can keep it going. But right now, in the first four games, they're my number one team. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not sure they're going to keep going, but right now, I can't deny the Philadelphia Eagles, who are playing really, really well. Hurts, they got to be my number one team. Impressive win against a tenacious Jacksonville squad last week. Jalen Hurts, running attack to the 210 yards on the ground. Their defense is stout. They lead the league in sacks. They're tied for first in takeaways. They're third in yards allowed and allowing only 17.8 points per game. Injuries to the secondary may creep up, but right now the Eagles soaring ahead of those birds. They are my number one in our NFL inaugural top five rankings. Going old school show. Joe and Chip's here for you. If you want to join us in the last probably 20 minutes or so, you can at 502-9730. Joe, lots of good football talk, but, you know, we got to talk a little baseball because the season is wound down today. So I'd like to get your thoughts on one. We'll start with Aaron Judge. Finally hit number 62 because I don't think he was going to do it. Look, he was pressing. Finally got it done last night in the second half of a doubleheader. Your thoughts on him breaking the mark. We know he has the 62 homer mark, which breaks Roger Maris's American League record, but you know the talk, 62. Is he have the legitimate home? And you know what I'm talking about that? What's your thoughts?
All right, so everybody knows off the top, I despise the New York Yankees. I despise the uniform. Never grown up not liking them. That being said, Aaron Judge is the home run king for a single season. You're using a deadened ball because you didn't want as many home runs this year. The man has done it with style, with class. Granted, I heard a comment that he has as many negative tests as Mr. Barry Bonds. There's an asterisk sitting there, Bonds. Aaron Judge has been nothing but class act all along. Hit his 62nd, which was a bomb, which wasn't even a no-doubter. Didn't put the bat, just put the bat down, put his head down, ran towards first base, ran the bases. He's playing baseball the way it's supposed to be played and having fun doing it. And sorry, but he would be, when you say home run king for a year, that would be the name I would come up with is Aaron Judge. Nobody else but Aaron Judge. The man has done it, and he's deserved it, and all kudos to him.
I like Judge, too, and you, like you, we talked about it, I think, yesterday when in one of our many chats. You know, I'm a Sox fan, and I don't like the uniform of the Yankees, but it's hard to dislike Aaron Judge. Like you said, he carries himself with dignity, and he bet on himself this year, man. And this offensive season that we're witnessing, he will not win the batting crown because he didn't today, but, I mean, you talk about a guy who's singing for his supper and getting it done. This pays a lot of athletes now. And all our major sports, just take that chance. He did it. He performed. He pressed a little bit at the end. I'm not sure that's going to have an impact, but if you just look at he's a mountain of a man. He's the Paul Bunyan of sports. He's an imposing guy. He fit that mold, man, the big dude. I mean, he'll stand out in the crowd in anywhere, and you'll know who Aaron Judge is because of his stature. I like that. I like that in players. They're larger than life. Him on TV, and he's larger than life in person. And you want to talk about a numbers game? Quirky. It's been 61 years since that 61 homer threshold has been broken by Roger Maris and Judge was C2. He broke it last night. Number 99, Aaron Judge, for the Yanks, hit his 66th homer, and he upped the Yankees record last night to 99-62. Aaron Judge, 99, right? 9 wins for the Yankees, 62 homers against the Yankees, 62 losses. Number game, it's great. It's been a magical year for Aaron. But here's where I don't think he's a single-season home run champion. It's all diatribe. It's all subjective. Until we find out and until we really put the stamp on these guys in the Hall of Fame or not, I'm still going to look at Barry Bonds, 73 as the title. It's just the way I think baseball is. Do I like Bonds? No. I thought all you need to know about Bonds, when he hit his 500th homer, the only people greeting him at the plate were his son, the bat boy. A well-liked guy. Was he a Hall of Famer? Yes. But I don't think, right now I'm looking at him as a champion. I mean, as much as I like Judge and Joey agree to disagree, it's just one of those things you can argue and better voices. The stand you take.
Fair enough. You can't agree on everything. It's like, you know, that's what the world is about. It's like, you need to disagree. It's just like you have a gentleman's argument or agreement, and that's the way it should be. But, you know, it's weird for me to be back in the Yankee up because it's just like I used to be in this position. But
well, that's all right.
No, that's true. We move on from there, and it's like, let's see how it goes. And look, if it's to be said, everybody knows I'm not a Bonds fan. Does he belong in the Hall of Fame? Yes, he does, because how many pitches were juiced in that very same era? So you had juiced against juiced, and he won that battle. So he belongs. This is just me. He belongs in the Hall of Fame. So does
Bonds. And we talked about. About many times. At what point is Major League Baseball just going to let people in? I mean, say what you want. It was an era, and you can't fault the players, because if Bud Selig's in and knowing what was going on, he's in the Hall of Fame, then the players should be as well. The players saved baseball, and they did it in a way where they were allowed to do it. And I can't fault the players for that, because it's a competitive balance. And if you're a competitive athlete, you do what you can to one-up yourself with the athletes you're playing against. So, Joe, when do you think they're finally going to say, okay, just let these guys in and not leave it up to a bunch of guys who vote with agendas?
Oh, I don't know, because if, like, you run out of time, then you're leaving it up to the Veterans Committee, and the veterans made up of old cronies who are the old-school boys, no pun intended, that they look at things and think that, like, they were just perfect back in the day, and everything past pre-1980 was done the right way. Well, I don't know, maybe Greenies and the rest of the stuff that was done in the 60s and 70s, it's, like, always been done that. You know what? Just get over yourself, boys. Put them in. Will they ever come to that conclusion? I don't know. You would think some people would come to their senses and realize that, like, you're doing a disservice to baseball by holding them back. because that black eye will always be held over baseball as long as you guys hold that grudge against these players. Just let them in. Let the guys that truly deserve it in.
I agree. And we as fans, I mean, I don't care what they do. I like the product, and if they want to do steroids, who am I to stop them? But you're right. I agree with you. Let them in at some point. I hope it's sooner than later. But I think at some point they will, because cooler heads will fail, and you realize, okay, it's an era. And the further we move away from that era, the more we're accepting. And we've seen some of the players. You can argue Ortiz in 2003 on that list. You can say what you want about him. I personally think he was doing performance-enhancing drugs. I still love the guy. I loved watching him play for the Red Sox. Maybe the best hitter in my lifetime I've ever seen. But maybe that's paved the way, Joe, with an Ortiz, who you can argue, not proof. But again, a lot of these players, there's no proof. But maybe that's going to pave the way for this now to have it happen.
Yeah, I think Ortiz getting in there when he was on that list, and he was always questionable. There's always the whispers, but you couldn't prove it. And look, there's always whispers of Bonds, but you really truly can't prove it. You can't prove that anybody was on it unless they were, like, got busted.
Right.
And those guys that you think were, you can't really prove it. And how are you going to actually prove it? Because what, we can take blood tests now? That's about 10 to 20 years late. So
Right. Just
move on for the betterment of the game. Move on and put them in. And it's like, you know, that door is going to have to be opened sooner or later. You're going to have to open up Pandora's box and face the facts. And look, baseball is still going to go on. But until you move forward with this, you can't move forward with the whole game. And baseball needs to move forward because they really need to get a lot of the fans back.
Agreed. And moving forward with all the implemented rule changes is what I like. And maybe it's just the start of something. So hopefully they keep on. Because, man, I'm sad today. And the Red Sox ended up closing out the season. But I'm a little sad. I love baseball, and I watch the playoffs because I'm a baseball fan. But I can't help thinking for the Red Sox playing today. But let's talk about that team, specifically the broadcast today. We know what the team is going to do, and we'll talk about them as the offseason starts with them. Well, basically, 2 minutes ago. But let's talk about today and the celebration today of one Dennis Eckersley. And the video tribute, if you saw it, was man, emotional. Seeing him in the booth get real emotional, but great player. And he's had a lot of great seasons outside of Boston, but he really created a niche in the broadcast booth. I'm going to miss Dennis Eckersley in Essen booth and what he thought meant to that organization. And, you know, he's old school, and he's really going to be missed. But I think he's one of the great players who was able to turn a great broadcast into a great career.
Wait, now I'm not going to quote him directly, but look at you, Chips, bringing the cheese. There you go.
Yeah. Well, how about you tossing salad? I love that about the guy.
And look, at first he was different and needed, but as he went along, you realize that the guy brought a lot of perspective from his playing days into it, and he brought a lot of color into it. And he's like, that's what you need to be an analyst like that is, you know, he didn't do the same stuff. He did stuff differently. He did it his own way, just like as a player. He did it his own way, and fans loved him. He was a cult hero, and not only with us, but it's like with across the country, people respected Eckersley as that, and it's like it was good to see. And you know what? Time goes on. It's like you got to call it off it sooner or later, and he's going to enjoy his life, and he's going to go and spend family time. No kicking the nuts to you, Tom, on that one. But he's going to go home, and he's going to spend some family time and enjoy his retirement. Definitely sorely going to be missed in the broadcast booth. I don't think he'll ever be replaced. It's tough. You say that, but there'll be somebody else coming along, but he won't be totally replaced. He'll be missed. He'll be definitely missed.
Yeah, and Joe, you hit on a word that represents what he provided. That's a color. He was a color man, color commentary. And if anything, he was a colorful commentator on the broadcast with the team there. And so if you're looking for a guy with color, he said it like it was. I like Ed Chaffee. I'm not afraid. Chris Collinsworth is one. I like the fact, and we remember the David Price days. He called him out, basically. He caught a lot of scrutiny for that. You know, maybe some of the players got on his case, but he was also had a lot of backing from the organization and the players. But I want my color commentator from my team and in general, you know, call it like it is, because, you know, the play-by-play guy is just that. He's a play-by-play guy. He relies on the other guy to provide insight into the game. And, man, Dennis did that, and he did it to a T.
Oh, he did. It's like, you know, hey, look, as a commentator, you can't be friends with everybody. You can't freaking satisfy the quote-unquote Karens of the world, because it's like, you know what, you're not going to make friends with everybody, but you be honest and upright and be the same all the time. Don't change your values, and he didn't, and he stuck to his what he wanted to do. And you got to respect him for that, whether you don't like what he's saying or like what he's saying. He was open and honest. And from his playing days, he just said it like he felt, and he wasn't hiding anything. You're going to offend people, but you can't be afraid to offend people, or you're not going to be a good color analyst, because that's just the nature of the game. It's just that's the nature of the beast. He wasn't afraid to knock the Red Sox neither, and management knew that. So he got away with stuff like that because he was honest. He wasn't making things up. He wasn't fabricating. He was just saying everything off. He wore his heart on the sleeve, and he wasn't changing for nobody.
I agree with you. I agree. So Dennis Eckersley will be missed. He'll be part of the things a little bit here and there, but not as much as he was. You know, with the passing of Jerry Remy, the Red Sox Nation, the Red Sox family has lost two very important podcasters in the generation, and even before that with Jerry, who started in the 80s. Eckersley's been a part of the Nesson broadcast since, what, 2004? Been a part of the broadcast team, a part of the organization long before that. Started his career with Cleveland, in Boston, ended it with Boston. He had a lot of success in Oakland, some in St. Louis. You know what he did with that mighty ace team? As a ball player, to be a great starter, to go on to close and have success and be great at that. You may never see that again. First to do that at two positions, and he was off. Happy retirement, Will, and Godspeed. But all right, Joe, Friday it starts. The postseason is here. Friday,
yes,
you're a baseball fan. Noontime. To 8, 9, 10 hours of great baseball.
This is the time where baseball is enjoyed because, all right, now the 162-game grind is over, and the monotony of watching baseball every day. Some people think it's monotony, but it's a grind to get here. As Alex Pujols said, these guys make good money, but they enjoy the game, they love the game, and you're all in it to win. If you're not in it to win as a baseball player, then you're in it for the wrong reason. Now it's time to get smart and serious and have some baseball. And I'm loving it because you know what? Now you're going to get some good series, good pitching. A lot of strategy goes into this that you don't think it is, but there's a lot of strategy being played. Let's see who's going to be the next Scott Brosius, Paul O'Neill, guys who step in the postseason who really didn't have great season, but the guys that like just the George Soler of the Atlanta Braves last year. It's like guys that, like, you don't think nothing of, all of a sudden come postseason and they light it up and they just live for the moment. Let's see who that live for the moment guy is going to be this year.
Yeah, and a couple of years ago it was Randy Arozarena for the they faced the Dodgers. Had a great postseason. I think he had 10 homers. He wasn't even a rookie yet. Came up in the year, and he was a household name after that, even though they didn't win the World Series. But let's talk about those Rays. Noon, 12:07 p.m. Friday. One game, winner goes on, the loser goes home. Tampa Bay is acting. The winner of the series, Joe, the winner of this game is to the Bronx. Who do you like in that one-game elimination?
Who's Tampa playing? Because you're breaking up a little bit.
I'm sorry, they are at Cleveland.
I want Cleveland. I think Cleveland will win because Cleveland had a excellent – I wouldn't say excellent. They had a very good last month and a half of the season. solidified the American League Central, and I still think Cleveland overall will beat Tampa Bay and face the Bronx, and I would love nothing more than Cleveland against the Yankees. I just think Cleveland in a one-game series has more talent and has the pitching staff and has the can throw enough out there that I think they can hold Tampa Bay down. Tampa this year didn't do their usual stuff, so they kind of faltered at the end. I mean, they did all right, but they were nipping at the Yankees' buds, and they actually had a chance, but no, they couldn't overcome that hill. So I've got Cleveland on this one.
Yeah, Tampa Bay, Wander Franco was on a lot this year, injured, and he's back now. But the key to Tampa's, I think, playoff hopes, Tyler is back now with two starts under his belt. He can turn it on. He looks like he's got the gas. So that could be interesting in a one-game situation. I'm not sure who's pitching. I've looked at the matchups. But I like Cleveland, and I think they're well-matched. I have a serious, serious affinity for Terry Francona. In my opinion, this guy, it may be the best manager in all of baseball. He gets the most out of any player on his team, and that's all you can ask for from a manager. In a low-payroll team like the Cleveland Indians, he has them winning the Central Division, and they're at home, and I love the Indians this game, partly because I'm not a big Rays fan, and I think you know why. Cleveland to move on with that dominant pitching staff, and he goes to the Bronx. At St. Louis in the National opener, the winner goes to the Braves.
Where you go, San Diego? You said San Diego was St. Louis, right?
Philadelphia at St. Louis.
Philly broke an 11-year drought, making it to the postseason. Now, can we get over that next hump? But the problem is you got the Pujols rejuvenation in St. Louis, where this is a tough one to go with, because it's like I like both teams, but do I think – I pick St. Louis to win this game only because I think they – I think Pujols has himself a game, and I just think St. Louis is the team right now is playing better overall. And look, as much as I like Philly and what Philly's done in the second half, I think St. Louis at home will do what they need to do to win that game.
I like St. Louis too. I like the pitching. I like Pujols, Dory, Goldschmidt, Arenado. I mean, what a duo they are. I mean, offensively and even defensively. One key situation, Joe, it gets really scary because a couple errors here and there, a wild pitch, a misplay on the outfield. God forbid it's a catwalk. That unless the Tampa Bay Rays move on, thank God. But one game situations are just that. It's really, really interesting. It's going to be white knuckling. I like the St. Louis Cardinals too, and I like the story. Part of me wants Philly because I love Schwarber, and he's hit 46 homers this year to lead the National League. But I like the Cardinals to come out in that game and to go to Atlanta to face the Braves. Seattle. Talk about Trout. Go ahead.
I like that series, St. Louis against Atlanta. I'm intrigued by that series, if it happens.
Agreed. Seattle, 21 years for the Mariners. They go to Toronto to take on the Blue Jays. The winner goes to Houston to take on the Astros. Your thoughts?
You know what? I'd go with the favorite again, but I'm not going to. I got Seattle in this one. I just think Seattle – young team, still a young team, relatively young team. They get the ace. I think they get the better pitching staff than Toronto. I know Toronto's got all the kids. I think Seattle's not phased coming all the way to the East Coast and going to Toronto, not fully East Coast, going to Toronto, playing in another dome. I've got Seattle on this one. I think they'll pull it out and full of surprise. It's like, you know what, you make it to the playoffs. I don't think they're happy with just making it to the playoffs. I think they'll win their one game against Toronto.
Yeah, and as much as I like Seattle too, I think they're still a year away. And they did it last year. They hung in it pretty well last year up until the end of the year. But with Rodriguez, the rookie, and he's a slam dunk rookie of the year. They got some pitching, got a lot of good things going on, and a team with a lot of young talent. I'd love to see him win this game, but I think it's Toronto's year to let, make that next step with their with the staff, and they're at home and the Big Bats, and that's a team I'd like to take. I think Toronto could give the Houston Astros a run for their money, because right now that Astros pitching staff led by Verlander, they're really solid. So a part of me would love to see Seattle. I just think Toronto's a little too strong this year, and I just want to take on the Houston Astros. And again, that's the third game of this winner-take-all at single elimination in the wild card. But let's move on to a real intriguing game at 8:07 p.m. Eastern. The San Diego Padres go to New York to take on the Mets, and the winner goes to L.A. to take on the Dodgers. Your thoughts on this? Because the Mets played really well. I think they won about 99 wins going into today. But your Braves led the NL East 6 days all year long and won the division. But this is a hell of a game, Joe, to nightcap in the wild card playoffs.
Hell of a game, and I can't believe a 100-win team is playing a one-and-done game. That's just, wow, that's like amazing. But I've got that 100-team win. Because, wait, when you get a guy named Scherzer or a guy named DeGrom that's going to get the baseball,
yep,
all for nothing, I will put all my money on either one of those to face San Diego. As much as San Diego's good and San Diego's got a chip on their shoulders, I don't care. You got DeGrom or Scherzer with the ball in hand. Yeah, I got the Mets. I got the Mets, and I got them moving on to play freaking L.A., and it's like that's one hell of a series to look forward to.
Yeah, no question. The Mets, too. I love San Diego, the affinity for them, but I think they need to take a little up and down. But if, you know, San Diego game situation, anything can happen. But, Joe, you know this. I mean, you talk about Scherzer and DeGrom. This is a one-game elimination. If you have to bring both of your studs on, no matter who you are, your two pitches, you shorten the staff, this is where it gets, this is where the managers and the chess game starts. And that's what I like about this single elimination. As much as I don't like the format, for a fan, it's great because it's that one-game situation, winner-take-all. But a part of me would really love to see these rounds be at least 2 out of 3, wouldn't you?
Oh, look, I would love it to be 2 out of 3. It's like, but then you're going to extend the season, and it's like, then we'll be playing November. Then it'll be like, move over Thanksgiving football. Here comes Thanksgiving baseball. move on over. Here we go. Game of the World Series. All right, you want to watch football? You want to watch baseball? There we go. Have your turkey and have your sports too. I would definitely love it, but you'd be pushing the season way too much. So it's like, you know, you've expanded as you've gone along, and you've kind of like nullified the fact that you could go 2 out of 3 in a wild card series. It's just there's not enough time, and like, you'd have to start even earlier in the year, and you couldn't.
Yeah. You know what the good thing is? Friday at noontime, Eastern. I mean, I want to talk about a day we're going to sit around. We're doing things. But you've got great baseball for at least about 10 hours. From noontime to 10 p.m. Eastern, maybe more, you've got some real good baseball, man. This is going to be high drama. I love the matchups, and I can't wait, Joe. And I'm thankful that you and I did a show together. So thank you for your time, my friend.
Hey, not a problem. It was always enjoyable. It was an excellent show. I always enjoy interviewing Howard because the man is just – Howard, you listen and you hear this. Ramble on all you want because, man, it's just like you're just soaking what you're saying. It's like you learn so much from a guy that just like is talking. He knows what he's talking about.
Any final thoughts, Joe? Because I will not be doing a Sunday show. You and I had Detroit Lions Patriots game this week, and we may do something on Facebook Live to be determined. And we'll see you on social media about that. But any final thoughts on the show and what you're looking forward to this weekend from the Patriots?
What I'm looking forward to the weekend is seeing Pat Patriot, old school. Yes, I'm saying old school helmet, old school uniform that has been worn in over a decade. Bring me back to my days of when this team totally sucked. And it just, I'll be happy because, like, you know what, tailgating, and it's like, you know what, the true fans will be out there, and I'll just have fun, you'll be in my element, and it's just looking at it, having a good time with it, and it's like, you know, you'll enjoy my buddy, and we'll have a good time, and like you said, it's yet to be determined what we do with Facebook Live. We'll figure out something, and we'll let you know, and it's always good talking to you, Chips. It's like always good, it's good therapy. I look forward to this on Wednesday. So always a fun time.
So, right. So I'm going to hold out. I'm going to hold out to the fire with 6 o'clock because I was going to ask you for your prediction of the game, but we're going to give that somewhere in Foxborough before the game starts. Joe and I will do a Facebook Live, even if it's for a minute, just letting kind of maybe just giving you our predictions what to look for in that game because this could be a really interesting matchup. A Patriot team who's going to be a quarterback and what to expect against a Detroit Lion team. That, if anything, is entertaining, Joe. But look forward to it was a pleasure, man. Thanks for your time today.
Johnny, always a good time. People, it's always great. You always find us on Blog Talk Radio. We have a going old school Facebook page. Don't be afraid to join it. And you can always find us on any social media sites.
You got it. And thanks to Joe, as always. I look forward to speaking with JC, John Cope. You're having fun on vacation with the fam, taking care of them. But always a pleasure. And you were here in spirit. All special thanks once again to Mr. Howard, covers the Cardinals for NFL, and NFL for EHNX.com and our Hall of Fame selection committee member. Always a pleasure having him. And also thanks to Lou, New Jersey. Always a pleasure. You're more than welcome anytime to talk some sports with us on our podcast. But that's going to do it. And for Joe, that's going to sign off. And until next week. This has been the Going Old School Show. Again, live every Wednesday on blogtalkradio.com. Like, follow us on the social, on the Old School Podcast page on Facebook, on our Twitter pages. Hashtag Opinions101. That is our motto. And thank you for listening and enjoying us on these sites where our podcasts are available. To each and every one of you, take care, enjoy your night, and be safe. Be well.
Good night, people.